This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. These next two reports explore what is sometimes called the resource curse. Developing nations with vast natural resources stay poor. That is certainly true in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has enormous resources of minerals. A civil war and ongoing conflicts have reduced Congo's mining production to just a fraction of what it once was. Now all that could change. Peace is returning, and more of the country is falling under the control of the central government in Kinshasa. NPR's Jason Bobien recently visited a copper mine and has this report.
The Kalukuluku copper mine stretches like a gouged-out, jagged scar across a plain near the city of Lubumbashi. Mining at Kalukuluku, like at most Congolese mines, is done by hand. At one end of the mine, men are shoveling sandy dirt out of a huge terrace pit to expose a subterranean copper vein. At the other end of the ravine, near a water-filled quarry, miners are hacking at the earth with picks. Barefoot teenagers lug 100-pound sacks of raw ore up out of the pits to a series of rusted oil drums. At the drums, several boys use a colander to wash the dirt in water. When they pull the colander out, the remaining rocks are mixed with specks of bright green malachite. Alan Alenge says he's separating the ore from the worthless dirt. The work is difficult, Alenge says, but necessary. There are very few jobs here, and his family needs the money he brings home. Miners are paid by the ton. They generally earn between $2 and $3 a day, depending on the quality of the ore they provide to the buyers. This part of the Congo, however, is one of the most mineral-rich in the world. The Katanga province holds 34% of the world's cobalt reserves and 10% of the Earth's copper. After the fall of Mobutu Sese Seko in 1997 and the ensuing civil war, Congo's formal mining industry collapsed. When Laurent Kabila seized power, he looked at the paradox of so much poverty residing above so much mineral wealth and told the locals to live off the land. He legalized freelance mining in what had been state-run pits. Congolese were free to try to grab as much raw ore as they could harvest. The result is that more than 100,000 people in Katanga now toil in the copper pits. Jean Katwala, who runs a union of artisanal miners in Lubumbashi, says it's hard to make a living picking copper by hand, and he says most people work in the mines because there are no other jobs. If you look at the conditions in which people live, Katwala says, they work in the mines just to get some money to survive. Katwala says one of the big problems with the mining industry in the Congo is that it only offers back-breaking, low-wage jobs. There used to be foundries and smelters to process the ore, but most of them have fallen into disrepair. Now, he says, foreign companies come to Congo, use the cheap labor to extract cut-rate raw materials, and leave little behind. The majority of the minerals found now are shipped out of the country, he says. Even unprocessed ore that might contain as little as 2% copper gets shipped, Katwala says, all the way to China. As Congo's conflicts, however, appear to be dying down and the country plans to hold its first democratic elections in four decades, large international mining companies are rushing to stake a claim to Congo's mineral wealth. In November, for instance, the world's second-largest copper producer, Phoenix-based Phelps Dodge, bought a huge mining concession in the Katanga province. Stephanie Walters is a political analyst who follows the Congo's mining industry.
Yes, it's a vote of confidence on behalf of the mining companies, but it does also have to be a managed process. And hopefully the new government will make sure that certain standards are adhered to by these mining companies, and that it doesn't just become a repeat of what we've seen in the past in the Congo, which is a mining companies coming in, taking what they can, and the Congo getting very little out of it.
Walters points out that mining could serve to jumpstart the entire Congolese economy if managed properly. Corruption, however, is a huge threat. Former President Mobutu Sese Seko siphoned so much money out of the state-owned Jeka mines that the company almost collapsed. Bribes and kickbacks are still a standard part of doing business in this country. And despite pledges by the transitional government in Kinshasa to clean things up, underhanded dealings continue in the industry. For instance, a 2004 report by Global Witness analyzed how much copper Congolese customs officials reported having shipped to China. Global Witness then looked at Chinese import records for copper coming from Congo. They found that the Congolese authorities were accounting for only 1/10 of the copper that they were shipping to China. With leakages like this of almost 90%, gaining control of the mining industry will be one of the new government's biggest challenges. Jason Bobien, NPR News.